TFM.
Welcome, Boomers, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Star Trek Enterprise podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my Steam co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, if you see my Pyrethian bat flying around, don't move. She's a bit agitated today because I didn't give her an extra helping of snow beetles.
Chris, you know I'm terribly afraid of bats. Why did you let me in here if it was out?
Just hold still. You'll be fine. You'll be all right. So everyone, we're going to talk a little bit about bats today, maybe as we continue our 20th anniversary rewatch of Enterprise with episode 12 of season 3, Chosen Realm. And here's a quick rundown of the story. The Enterprise crew already knows that there is something unusual about the spheres scattered around the Delphic Expanse. But the extent to which some locals hold them sacred comes into focus when they bring aboard a group of aliens who find scientific examination of the globes to be sacrilege. As these extremists attempt to commandeer the ship, Archer and his crew learn that they are in conflict with a rival group who view the spheres in a slightly different way, with extraordinary consequences for their shared homeworld. So, Matthew, we're almost at the halfway point now. I guess we actually are at the halfway point of the Zindi storyline for season 3. And it opens up with the discovery of a third sphere, which apparently is just like all the other ones. One of these things is just like the others.
Yeah, I mean, I do think this is interesting. Partly because, you know, we're going to move the story forward a little bit here in the idea of, you know, these spheres and you get T'Pol being able to calculate then how many she believes there to be, and also gives them a much better sense of, you know, where they would run into anomalies, which is great. So in that sense, I think this is one of those things where, as the midway point of the season, we are trying to overcome some of the major hurdles that were there at the beginning of the season, right? And the goal now is to, you know, every season of any show, especially when you get more serialized, is you start with a certain set of problems, and the whole goal is to begin to solve those problems, and then other problems arise. And that's very much what we feel here, I think. Because there's a real sense of that this crew, because of the discovery of this third sphere, they're being able to enter and exit from the cloaking field pretty unscathed. The nature of the data that they're getting and what they're now able to extrapolate because of that, you know, it just creates this sense of, okay, this mission feels doable because we are overcoming a lot of the obstacles that were keeping us from really being focused on the mission because we kept being waylaid by anomalies and those type of things. And instead, this episode then throws a completely different type of anomaly at us that, you know, it's not that Archer and the crew aren't necessarily expecting it to happen, but I don't think, you know, they expect it to go the way that it does. And so, it really, I think, does a very good job of kind of bridging from the first half of the season to where we're going to go for the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I found it interesting that they discover another sphere and that they learn that the spheres that they found so far are all exactly the same, because you wouldn't expect that necessarily. And it gives you a clue, what gives them a clue in their real world about what might be going on. But it gives us as a viewer a clue as well that there's something more to this than just that there are these mysterious objects that they are running across. And we come to expect now that these play a bigger role in what's going on in the expanse, even though we don't know what that is yet. And we'll talk about this later. I have it on the outline towards the end, but I think what's happening with the Trianons and their beliefs here, and the fact that the spheres are all identical, actually is an interesting way of drip feeding us clues that there's something else going on, not only in the Expanse, but with the Zindi as well. And I think that overall with this third season, they've done a pretty good job, and it continues here, of pacing the reveal of the clues.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was obvious when it first aired. When you were watching this from week to week, it felt different. But when you can just go through and you can just watch, you know, as people do with a lot of TV shows these days, watch one episode every night. So, you know, in a few weeks, you can go through the whole season. And when you're watching it at that pace, I think that you can see how they pasted the reveal of the clues, and they unravel the mystery of what's going on with the Zindi. And I think this episode is a good part of that, even though the core of this episode is about something different.
Yeah, I mean, I think they found a way to do it that is interesting and it's challenging. And like you said, it allows those threads that are being placed, you know, here in this tapestry of the season to be interwoven and kind of underlaid under a story to which can almost overshadow what's happening, right? And until you get to the reveals later in the season, you'll probably look back on this and be like, oh, that's what they were doing. Or it's what happens in a rewatch, right? Where you, you realize, oh, yeah, I didn't really pick that up the first time because, you know, I was so enamored with and so drawn into the storyline that they're telling is one that is so in my face. It definitely, you know, keeps me, I think, from really necessarily looking in other places for other clues. And I find that really interesting. So,
So I mentioned that the, you know, the core of the story is about something different. It is about the spheres, but what's going on related to the spheres is that they encounter these aliens, the Trianons, who are on a pilgrimage. They're making a pilgrimage to all the spheres because they view them as holy objects that were created by the makers. They call the anomalies, you know, that keep rippling through the ship and all, the maker's breath. And they call the Delphic Expanse the Chosen Realm, which is, of course, the name of the episode. And there's this disagreement that we find out about amongst the people, the Trianons, that there's this group and then there's another group that have different beliefs about the spheres and about the makers, but it's something so trivial. It's that it takes, they believe that it took 9 days for the makers to create the chosen realm. And then the other group believes that it took 10 days. And, you know, that mirrors, if you look at religions on Earth, the nuance, you know, you've got religions where you've got Christianity and Islam and Judaism and all, which believe in the same God, but there's a disagreement about the details of the story.
Yeah, that I won't get into that. I wouldn't say believing the same God, but yeah, just it's
okay.
Fine.
But on a basic level, like there are details that people differ on, but
you definitely can get to this idea of there, you know, being details that can seem trivial from the outside.
Right.
I think that's probably the least nuanced or well thought out part of this story.
Yeah,
it almost seems like an afterthought of like, what are we going to make these people's, you know, issue? And so,
yeah, well, that's the key. The reason I bring it up, and of course, I'm like super simplistic explanation of that. My only point in that was not to delve into the details of Earth religions, but just the fact that as humans, when it comes to religion, there are things that certainly from an outside perspective, it seems like the details are quite minor, but people are fighting over them. And that's what they're putting into this story. And I think the key to it and the key to the story and the reason that it plays out as it does is that this is like 2 years after the 9/11 terrorist attacks on the United States. And the entire season is inspired by those events and the U.S. reaction to those events. And I think you see that in the story, the reaction of an unusually one-sided view for Star Trek of who the Trianons are and just portraying them as religious zealots who hijack the ship.
Yeah.
Again, Federation starships get hijacked a lot, it seems. Yeah. But, you know, they hijack the ship, they blow up people, they blow up part of the ship, and they want to execute Archer because he had data about the spheres in the computer. And for them, that's something you just can't do. And, you know, that's the core of the story. And I think that the reason the story is told that way is very much because of its proximity to real life events that inspired what's going on in season three.
Okay. Yeah. And I think, you know, you mentioned that you felt like that maybe there isn't as much nuance in the portrayal of them. And I think I wouldn't say that there's not enough nuance. I actually think that there's quite a bit of nuance. And the nuance is that we're not going to shy away. And we were talking about this in a recent episode of To the Journey, where it's like, yeah, you're not creating enough nuance. You're generalizing and all this stuff. And it just doesn't really work for the story. I think they're extremely true to the reality of the world that we live in, where there are people who say because of their religion that a person needs to die because they have done a certain thing or they believe a certain thing. And that is the reality of the world we live in. And so I think by not treating that as not true, this episode would have done a disservice to itself. And actually by doing that, I think it challenges us to think about that not all things then can be true. If I believe that it's right to kill everybody that doesn't believe like I do and you don't, it's like, okay, one of us is right and one of us is wrong. One of these is true and one of these is not. And Star Trek has never necessarily shied away from this idea of, I think especially TOS does this incredibly well. Deep Space Nine plays with this a little bit, right? But the whole idea of like true good and evil, right? This is what we're kind of dealing with in those questions, those realities, what makes maybe somebody good or evil or an idea good or evil, or maybe even a certain religion good or evil. And they just, I think this episode does a great job of just portraying it and then allowing us to have to wrestle with the reality of then what we see in our own world. Now, yes, some of the, I think the stuff here that's too on the nose is just like the disagreements between the Trianons on like what separated them. You know, I think that is so trivial. It does feel like silly and maybe not, more like an afterthought of, okay, we need something to like separate these people. What is it going to be? Oh, one has one day and the other has two. And it feels almost as trivial as what you get with the TOS episode where like, oh, I'm white on one side, but you're black on the other and you're black on one side and I'm white on the other, but it's the wrong way. So, you know, it's just, it feels so on the nose that you're just, but all that I think to say, for me, watching this episode, and somebody who's extremely religious, you know, and works for a church and all those things, right? I think that the storyline here actively portraying characters whose religions are dangerous and that ideas themselves, like, you know, there isn't such a thing that is everybody's right, you know, like some people are just wrong because what they want destroys other people literally, you know, it kills them. Right. And and so I found that to be incredibly fascinating that, you know, because of the events, obviously, of 9/11, that we were going to deal with that in Star Trek and we weren't going to apologize for dealing with it. And I don't know if they would ever do this, you know, today at this point, which is probably a sad thing that they wouldn't have the guts to tell this type of story. But I'm glad that this one got made because I think the reality is that we now live in a world where It doesn't even have to be about religion. It can just be about your political ideology is against my mm-hmm. political ideology. And because what you believe means that I want to literally kill you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've moved even from the politics of religion to the politics of politics, which have now just become people's religion. Like they are mm-hmm. the fervency to which people are, you know, holding on to their politics has become religious in that sense yeah. because they're not religious. So they need some sort of something. And right. I think this episode is actually a maybe even more poignant now than it was then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and also from the time this was made, we've gone from it being groups that you could consider this group and then this outside group to internal, where it's groups within the single group that are at each other's throats about some tiny difference, which is obviously extremely dangerous.
Well, and I think, you know, I just want to add to that. We now live in a culture where we are in such an echo chamber.
Yeah.
Because everybody can choose where their information comes from. And because exactly. of the reality of the world we live in.
Yep.
And we don't know what to choose. We don't really necessarily know who to believe, who to trust, because too many institutions have just spent time lying to us that everything yeah. seems to just kind of be crumbling. And a big part of that is you know, I when you take away an absolute truth, when you take away the idea of absolute truth, then everybody mm-hmm. is just left trying to figure out what is true. And when, mm-hmm. when that happens and you're just making it up as you go along, you end up in that kind of place where it's like, unless you agree with me on every single thing, your ideology is purity next to my pure ideology. If you're mm-hmm. off by just a millimeter, oh, yeah. man, you should just die. You know, it's like, wow, yeah. that is kind yeah. of insane that we're here.
And that's where we are. And you can see the impact of that on the functioning of society. In this story, so you mentioned TOS, the episode is Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, and it is very on the nose, and it does seem a bit silly that you've got these two aliens in that episode where one person is white on the left side of their face and black on the right side, and the other person is reversed. So the dispute is, it had to do with racial inequality, but the dispute is that because the colors are switched, one side views the other one as inferior and shouldn't be, you know, shouldn't have rights and should be destroyed. And here you've got a similar idea in the idea that, well, we believe 9 days, they believe 10 days, and therefore,
right,
you know, that's it. We just can't coexist. And those things are very much on the nose. And I think in science fiction and in Star Trek, you know, it is a good way to address social issues and to deliver social commentary is just to call things out in that way that seems so trivial that almost no one would be able to look at that difference, especially the one here, 9 days or 10 days, and think, yeah, that's a rational way of thinking about things. You know, most people would not be able to say, okay, I get it. Yeah, 9, 10 days, let's kill each other over that, right? But from that, you can then delve into the social commentary of that and explore it more, which I think the original series does that. They spend time on yep. that in Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, where here it's just something that's thrown out. And then it doesn't really go anywhere else until you get to the very end when they get to the home world and they see that, well, yeah, they yep. did end up destroying each other, which is an ending that
yeah.
to me feels tacked on to the end of the episode. And it feels it makes sense for the story, but it also, maybe it's because of the visual aspect of it compared to what was going on the ship or something. It just feels sure. a little bit disjointed. But I guess the way I see the story is that there was an opportunity to explore that aspect in a way that it's not like, I agree with you that you cannot live in this world to have the idea that every point of view is equally valid. There are cases where this is just simply wrong. You know, if you've got a group whose beliefs are, we've got to destroy everyone else who doesn't agree with us. Well, okay. there's a point at which you can't just view them as like, okay, well, they believe that's fine.
Yeah.
But it, within Star Trek, I think a role that Star Trek has played over these six decades that it's been around is to serve as a vehicle for at least exploring the possibility of bridging gaps. And this episode, I think, is a lot more black and white than I would normally expect from Star Trek, very much because of the time that it was made, where, you know, we were attacked and thousands and thousands of people were killed.
Yeah.
And there was this view of, well, okay, there's no way back across this, right? Mm-hmm. This is going to be a true battle that has to take place. So,
yeah, I think a part of that, though, too, and this is really interesting to me, you know, I think that this shows a religion who doesn't actually have any answers for the embodied experience that we all have as beings.
Mm-hmm.
Because the moment that it is challenged by anything, it just disregards those, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think it also shows you that any religion that just completely disregards what we experience as a being in reality and what we can learn as science, and that your religion cannot be challenged in that sense, or doesn't have an answer for any of those things. You know, I think it does a good job of showing that there are religions that do a better job of that than others, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that actually do have answers for questions that are more difficult. You know, to have a completely to basically end up in a place where, you know, as Socrates would say, you know, an unexamined life is not worth living. Well, if your faith mm-hmm. can't be examined and can't answer any questions, then that's probably not worth having either. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things I actually like about this episode, because there are religions in our world that are very much like that. The moment you question them in any way, shape, or form, and anything, they don't have an answer. Like, you know, the fact that it's the maker's breath. Well, we know that those are anomalies caused by the spheres that are creating this thing we know as mm-hmm. the expanse, right? But they're not willing to hear that. And I find that to be an incredibly interesting. And again, it is actually a pretty nuanced look at that there are some religions like this out there. And so I think they do a pretty good job of
mm-hmm.
of showing that here in the episode. And, you know, and that's one of the things I think, again, when we've talked so much about Deep Space Nine together, that's one of the things I think that the Bajoran religion was able to show in Star Trek, where it's like it deals with the reality of the science, but it also there's a whole other aspect of the things that we can't understand as beings, because our minds are finite, right? And there is only so much we can understand. And so to understand what it means to be out of time and space and yet exist in space and time, you know, mm-hmm. how do you understand that? You know, we can't. So I like that about this episode, that we're kind of dealing with that type of religion. Mm-hmm. And I you know, people probably could be surprised to hear me say that, but I think it's actually they do a good job. So,
well, you mentioned that the Enterprise crew knows, they understand that these spheres are creating these anomalies, but the Trianons call it the maker's breath, and they don't want to hear that there could be anything else about it. And there's that tense moment between T'Pol and the leader about the religion versus the science aspect of things. And I thought that was, I don't know that it would have worked for the story they wanted to tell, but just for me as a Star Trek fan and as a viewer, I felt like that was a missed opportunity in this story to explore the tension between religion and science. And that's something that, you know, Star Trek can do well. Of course, we see it. You've mentioned Deep Space Nine. They balance that quite well with the Bajoran religion and the Starfleet Federation scientific views. But I thought they could do a little bit more of that with this story. It could have been there. And I thought that was a really good aspect of T'Pol's character to bring out, even though it was a brief part of the story.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense, too, for T'Pol to be like that. You know, mm-hmm. we know that Vulcans by this point are very removed from their religious backgrounds for the most part, right? And in fact, even more removed than those of Spock's time period. And we'll dive into that in season four, where there's this, you know, Vulcan reformation that's going to happen mm-hmm. that actually brings them back closer to their more spiritual roots, right? And so I think that that's an incredibly interesting nuance that we get to explore here with the character of T'Pol. But I think you're right in that you run up against the fact that, you know, you only have so much time to tell a story. But I think the place where they actually do that kind of well is where you have the husband and wife, right, who are coming to grips with the dogma of this group of Treanans and what it actually means, and do they want to raise their child in this? And mm-hmm. their decision is one where they're thinking, no, we don't. We would rather, you know, abort our child than bring them into a world where they're going to continue this. And which I think really shines a light on the fact that And this happens, you know, too. It's not just religions, but I mean, you get different cults or whatever as well mm-hmm. that happen, where people come out of those, and you know, the terrible things that have happened there. And I think in some ways, you know, this feels as much like a cult as even more so than just like religious extremist, because of the idea that, you know, most cults, and I would say harmful religions, are the ones where you cannot question the leader. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you watch any documentary on, you know, HBO Max or any of those places about the different cults and the people who come out of them, one that just came out a few years ago about the Nexium cult that happened, that, you know, a lot of very famous people kind of got sucked into. There's a great documentary called The Vow. And it became one of those places where you couldn't question at all the person at the top. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens. And that's what happens here. Right. And so, from the faith that I come from, I mean, even in our own scripture, we have plenty of people questioning God. Mm-hmm. You know, you can read plenty of places in the Bible where people are like, God, I don't really know what's going on. What's happening? I mean, there's literally a whole book called the Psalms where people are just like, dude, things are really bad right now. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing it? You know, so like the fact that you can question God is comforting, right?
Yeah. There's also a Crash Test Dummies song where people just question God. So,
yeah. Anyway, so I think that, again, that's one of the places where I have to give the writers a lot of credit, mm-hmm. even though there is some lack of nuance just within, you know, the Treanans and their beliefs and the difference between them. A lot of this is actually, I think, really well done and seems very real. And the beauty of that is, again, it makes us question the reality of the world we live in. And I think that this episode is even more important now than it was then, because this mm-hmm. has moved beyond the realm of just talking about the idea of religion, but this is moved to the realm of people having their politics become their religion, which is now creating this mm-hmm. sense of, well, if you don't believe the way I do politically, then you probably should just die. And we're experiencing this here in the United States, and it is terrifying to me. And so, again, rewatching this episode, I was like, wow, that's not what they were talking about here, but they mm-hmm. don't realize how this episode has kind of grown with the times in a way that I wish it wasn't true.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's not just politics in terms of left and right. It's gotten even more granular than that too.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Just specific issues, you know, it's gone to that extreme at this point. So, yeah, I think you're right in that this feels like a cult, and it could be that the group of Treanans who believe 10 days is the mainstream religion, and this group is an offshoot that's an extremist offshoot, which would it would fit perfectly well with the storyline after 9/11 of general Islam versus the extremist Islam that we saw, carrying out attacks on the U.S. and elsewhere around the world. And So yeah, it could be that for sure. I wanted to mention just quickly that I did think the idea of there being the makers and that this being the chosen realm and the idea that there's something going on with these fears that the Triannans have is an interesting little aspect to the overall story, because I think they're on to something that the Enterprise crew isn't onto yet, in the fact that there is something going on. There are beings who are manipulating space and manipulating the Zindi, and that's actually where the storyline is going.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and I love that you pulled this out, because, again, as we kind of talked about at the beginning, this is one of those episodes where, as you're watching it the first time, you're so kind of wrapped up in the experience of what is happening to the Enterprise, and that the fact that these people have come on here, we thought we were going to help them, and now that we're being attacked, and then the reality of the storyline we're talking about, of, you know, religious extremism and those type of things, you're so wrapped up into that. The other part kind of goes by the wayside, because, you know, this is a show where we don't know any of these characters, right? We don't know if they're going to survive. And, you know, for most Star Trek shows, they do survive, but we don't know what's going to happen to them. And so any of these characters could die at any point. And I think that's, you know, again, that they were doing a great job, I think, with the series at this point. And so, yes, the fact that they plant this really important story point for the rest of this season and what it's going to mean, it's actually, it's the antithesis to everything we were just talking about To the Journey with that episode Cathexis.
Yeah.
And where it's like, yeah, this, they really had a plan and they were really understanding what they were doing, you know, and they're hitting, I think, at this point of the season, all cylinders on what it means to be doing a serialized show. And a big part of that is, you know, they obviously learned a lot from what they had done with Deep Space Nine, and they're doing it here. And so it's great.
So a final point as we wrap up, Archer's character, you know, this is a moment where they're continuing to evolve his character from what we saw at the beginning of the series and through this Zindi arc onward. So what do you feel this does for his character?
Man, this was something that we were talking about before we started the episode on the other side of the Expanse. I think that this is one of those episodes that's incredibly key to the character of Archer and where he's going to go, not just for this season, but into the next season. This is one of those episodes where Archer does the same thing that he would have done in seasons one or two. He goes to help the aliens that are sending the distress call. And here, by him being taken advantage of in this way, it hardens him to the realities that the galaxy is a much different place than he thought it was. And this experience in the Expanse is going to be one that the recovery from, he will never be the Jonathan Archer he was before this, right? And that is fascinating, right? That, again, I think it actually just goes to kind of the maturing of Jonathan Archer as a character, right? We're going to strip away his naivety. There will be no naivety by the time this season is over, right? And in fact, what's going to be left is a rock-hard diamond, right? Because everything else is just going to be stripped away from him. And I really love this episode for that, because as I was watching it, I was thinking, man, no wonder Archer feels so angry for the rest of the season, feels so frustrated by the end of the season and into the next season, and has such a, you know, his temper is always, his fuse is much shorter because he's always afraid that he's going to be taken advantage of, I think, much like this episode, right? And he's always on guard for that, maybe a little too much. And I just think it's just really well done, man. It's just great writing, if you ask me.
What are your final thoughts and what's your rating on this one?
Yeah, I think that this is actually a really good episode of Enterprise. I think this is a great way to launch us into the second half of the season. Like you said, they drop a lot of hints for where we're going to go with the storyline. And from here, I mean, if you think this episode was a banger, we're legit just going to get nothing but bangers really from here on out. We're going to really dig into the rest of this season. And so much is about to happen. And it's so exciting. And I mean, like, again, I really like this episode. I'm going to actually give this 4.5 out of 5 spheres. So just a half a sphere there. That one was less than perfect. It was not quite the same as the others. You know, the makers just ran out of time.
Well, I mean, if the Enterprise can find that half sphere, it's going to save them a lot of time because all the spheres are otherwise identical. And they could just see right into the middle. They could just look right in. They don't have to.
It's just an unfinished sphere. So yeah,
it's going to be really easy for them. So
it's more like a bowl in space.
A bowl in space.
Yeah, the makers just pour their Cheerios in it. So.
Yeah, it's a good thing we're in the Milky Way then. So.
Chris. Oh, man.
All right. I also enjoyed this episode. I've always found it to be a very interesting one. And, you know, really dealing with a very serious real world issue in a way that I talked about today, that it's not what I would normally expect from Star Trek, to be a little bit more on the nose and a little bit more of, hey, you guys are wrong, you're bad. But I think in this case, it is warranted. And I think it was appropriate for the time that it was made, and I've always found it to be an interesting one. So I'm going to give it 7 lies about the transporter.
That was a great moment.
All right, everyone, we'd love to hear your thoughts on Chosen Realm. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. Of course, you can also send us email if you like. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose Warp 5, and that will come to us right out of the Chosen Realm into the ordinary space where we are podcasting. And also, if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not trying to find a sphere that's not like the others, where can people find you?
Well, that was that half sphere. So I found it. It's good. But you can find me all over social media.
Check that off the list.
Oh, gosh. Yes. All over social media under the name Matt Rushing 02. Of course, here on the network, outside, all this great Star Trek talk that Chris and I do. Got the 602 Club talking about all of the franchises that we love. In fact, as we're recording this, you know, we will have wrapped up our conversations about Stranger Things. The series has ended, so you can check that out. We've got, you know, the latest Avatar movie and so much else coming out this year. So looking forward to you checking that out. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network. Got 2 shows. One is called Outpost, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, where we're talking about Star Wars each and every week. Now, Chris, when you're not trying to figure out just what to do with that Pyrethian bat that's out, where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm going to Costco. I'm going to buy snow beetles in bulk. Then I won't have to worry about it anymore.
Smart. I hope you have a really, really big shed in your backyard, because when they say they sell in bulk, they mean in bulk.
Never seen that many beetles in one place before. Yeah, when I'm not doing that, you can find me, of course, on the network doing all those shows with you. As you mentioned, Larry Nemechek and I have a new episode of The Ready Room out where we look back at Strange New Worlds Season 3. And of course, you can find me in the back catalog in many shows from the past 15 years talking about a wide variety of Star Trek topics. So check those out if you want to hear more of my thoughts there. You can also find me on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. Blue Sky is where I'm most active, but you can find me wherever you are. So please drop me a note And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything else we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help to find out how to support the network. Please go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So thank you so much to everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, I'm excited about next time when we're going to welcome back an old friend in Proving Ground.
Chris, I can't wait for that, so let's go.
Well, you mentioned that the Enterprise crew knows, they understand that these spheres are creating these anomalies, but the Trianans call it baby's breath. I knew that was going to happen at some point. I knew it.
The baby's breath.
The baby's
breath. It'll get you every time, man.
Yeah.
Don't let your baby breathe on you. See what it does to his arm? Oof. Dang.
No,
that's
I was just picturing these tiny white flowers shooting out of the spheres and
yes,
wrapping the Enterprise. But no.